Now, the first couple of Texas Radio. Here's Bill and Allison Mancaro.
Well, I'm Bill Mancaro, and Allison is here.
I can talk.
Oh, good. Go ahead.
I'm Allison Mancaro.
Yes, you are. And we are glad to have you with us on a very chilly Saturday morning.
Actually, what did her car say it was?
24 degrees.
So what did it call it?
Frigid.
And that's our car not only tells us what the temperature is outside, but it describes it.
Yes, describes it for
so
us.
This morning
we don't know the 24 is frigid. But well, we're glad to have you with us. We are Bill and Allison. We are sometimes wrong.
But we're always right.
We're always right. Fighting a never-ending battle for truth, justice.
And the American way.
And we are never PC, politically correct, but we try to be...
biblically correct.
Biblically correct is our attempt, most importantly, to be biblically correct. But we have a trigger warning. We are non-binary here at the Hill Country Patriot. Non-binary. We like to bookend our show with the Bible. Here's a verse from Romans chapter 10. Should be very familiar to you. If you confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus and believe in your heart that God has raised him from the dead, you will be saved. A.W. Pink wrote, "None but the Lord himself can afford us any help from the awful workings of unbelief, doubting, carnal fears, murmurings. Thank God one day we will be done forever with unbelief." I often think of the man in Scripture who said to Jesus, "Lord, I believe, help thou my unbelief." That's something we can all pray, because we all have our valleys occasionally and doubts and fears. And so that's a good verse to pray back to the Lord. "Lord, I believe, but help thou my unbelief." By the way, A.W. Pink wrote a fantastic book, which I highly, highly recommend. One of the, you know, if I had to have, you know, be on a desert island with you know, half a dozen books, this would be one of them. It's called The Sovereignty of God by A.W. Pink, P-I-N-K. And that's a verse, by the way, is what I read to your brother, Allison, on his deathbed. Mm-hmm. And he said absolutely he believed. And there was never really, you know, a lot of indication, you know, that he didn't go to church and et cetera. But he was not contemptuous of Christianity at all. But he said, "How could you not believe?" And that was you know, my heart leapt when he said that. Well, we've got a lot to cover. I mean, I must have between Allison and I, we probably have.
I was going to say, it sounds like you're not going to let me talk.
I'm not going to let you talk. No, because I have so much to say. What do you?
I guess I didn't need to waste my time getting anything prepared, did
you
I?
Are the engineer.
It's
as
true.
Well as the on-air personality.
It's true.
And I just sit here and look pretty, but we couldn't do this show if Allison wasn't here. Seriously. I've told this story before, but when Harley, I ran into Harley somewhere, and he knew that I had a radio background, because we had known each other for years, and he said, "Well, I'm going to take some time off. Could you come in and fill in for me? I'll show you how to run the board." Well, I didn't know how to run the board. So I come in, and it's three computer screens and two computer mouses and dials and levers and flashing lights. And, you know, the first 30 seconds he's showing me, he says, "Well, you do this and this and this and this." Of course, you only have about half of a second to do over here and do this and this. And I'm thinking, I can't do this. And I don't know how to tell him I can't do this. I went home and I told Allison, I said, "I don't know how to tell Harley I can't do this." She said, "Well, I'll do it. Let me try." So she came in. "Well, you finish the story, Allison."
So I came in and I sat at Harley's elbow for a week during his show, 3 hours a day for 5 days.
And you learned the board.
I learned how to do it. And as several longtime engineers have said to me when I said I was nervous about it, they said, "Don't worry about it. No matter how badly you screw up, it ain't brain surgery. Nobody's going to die."
Yeah.
So that was very comforting.
Yes, it is. It's very comforting as well.
Probably when I make mistakes, most people wouldn't notice. Mm. Harley would if he was listening, which he usually does.
He usually does, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just to keep us on our toes, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay.
And Bill will sometimes scowl at me.
I never scowl. I'm smiling. That's when it happens. I'm smiling.
Well, but before we get started, we want to thank all of you who contributed to the Radiothon, which was on live on Wednesday from 7 until 1 p.m. And
to benefit the district grandstand stock show for all the kids all over the Hill Country.
And Harley and Lorraine and Matt and we were all on the air during that. And we raised, the last we had heard, the day of the auction, we had raised over $25,000.
Yeah, how about that? That's far beating last year's Radiothon for the grandstand show. And we thank every single one of you who contributed, both either through the direct contributions or through the auction, the online auction that we had. And we had some great prizes there. But most of all, it benefited the kids. You know, as we said during the Radiothon, only a few kids get the top prizes at stock shows. But a lot of kids who work just as hard and spent, they and their family spent just as much money, but they didn't get the top prizes. And so what this was all about was to help them out as well.
And it's not cheap raising those animals. You have to buy feed for them. And, you know, not just providing their food, but actually taking care of them.
Veterinary bills.
And you know, during this super cold weather that we've been having, these kids are out at the barn at 6 o'clock in the morning taking care of the animals.
And speaking of animals and super cold, please bring your pets in. I know we talked to somebody who said, well, I'm going to winterize my doghouse. Well, you can't, you know, when it gets this cold, you know, the dog is not going to be that warm. So bring your pets in, please, in cold weather like this, and take care of your other pets who can't come in the house, like horses and things like that. Well, we've got a little bit of Texas history that we thought you would like to hear about. This week in 1839, Waterloo was approved as the new capital of the Republic of Texas. Do you know where Waterloo is, Allison?
No, I don't.
No. Well, I didn't either. But that's because it's been renamed to Austin.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
In 1836, Columbia, Texas, is now West Columbia, had become the first capital of the Republic of Texas. It remained the capital for 3 months. Then Houston was selected as a temporary capital until 1839. But the tech commission was impressed by the Waterloo, a.k.a. Austin today, impressed by its beauty, abundant natural resources, central location. They purchased almost 8,000 acres of Waterloo and adjacent lands. And because it was remote from population centers and it was vulnerable to attacks by Mexican troops and Indians political opposition made Austin's earlier in doubt as the capital. So, do we still have that? Attacks by Mexican troops in Austin? Might have.
I don't know.
No? I haven't heard about it lately. But
we will be having some. Are you done with it?
I'm done with that one, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, you're talking about Austin, more than 100 Apple employees could be packing their bags to move to Austin.
100?
100. It's a major cut of the San Diego-based AI unit. And Apple informed the 121 people last week that the unit is relocating to Austin. The team works on Apple's AI assistant Siri. And they were expecting a relocation, but they didn't think it was going to be as far as Texas. Hmm. So Apple had previously told staff that the company planned to move to another San Diego office at the end of January, and had given employees boxes to pack up. But they changed their mind, and they want to unite the AI program in Austin, where most of the employees are already based.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently most of the affected staff do not want to move to Austin.
Because they're a bunch of lefties, and they figure Texas is a bunch of hicks.
Yeah, but they'd be wrong about Austin.
Yeah.
But those who decide against relocating or taking a different job within the company will be let go on April 26th.
Okay, well, we don't need them to bring their lefty politics.
Mm-hmm.
We got enough of that in Austin. Of course, it's, you know,
But those who do head to Austin by June will be offered a relocation stipend of $7,000.
Hmm. Well, speaking of corporate changes, every staff member yesterday of Sports Illustrated was fired. Every single staff member. I mean, the magazine's like 60-some years old. It was recently purchased by some other company, and they have fired everyone. And the reason? Because nobody's buying the magazine anymore. Why are they not buying Sports Illustrated? A large part is due to their annual swimsuit issue. This year they went woke and put in plus-size models. And I've seen the store, I was reading, had a picture of a couple of them, and they are certainly plus-size. And, you know, the 300-pound woman in a bikini and that kind of stuff. And people just didn't, you know, they're done with Sports Illustrated. So every employee of Sports Illustrated, including the custodian, was let go on Friday. How about that? Well, we can't forget that the March for Life was yesterday in Washington, D.C. And we're going to be talking about life issues a little bit on this show in honor of that. Lorraine Lamon, our own Hill Country Patriot, Lorraine Lamon, who comes on at 10 o'clock weekdays here, right here in the Hill Country Patriot, your information station, is going to be, we have an interview with her, and she has a story that she has not told on the air before that is absolutely, at least at the time we interviewed her, she had not told this story, and you will be absolutely stunned by it, absolutely stunned by her story. And that's all I'm going to say about it.
And that's going to be coming up in the 9 o'clock hour.
No, right around a little after 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did you know, Bill, that the Empire State Building has its own zip code?
I'm not surprised at that. No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's cool. Well, did you know, Allison, that in 1929, this week, Popeye the Sailor Man first appeared in print, and the first newspaper in the nation to publish the cartoon was the Victoria, Texas Advocate. Mm-hmm. And the cartoonist, therefore the cartoonist, Elsie Crisler Segar, not the kind you smell, this is S-E-G-A-R, called Victoria Popeye's hometown. And Crystal City, Texas, outside of San Antonio, claims a special relationship to Popeye. The spinach industry credited Popeye and the creator, Segar, with the 33% increase in spinach consumption once Popeye was first published. And in 1937, Crystal City was called the spinach capital of the world, erected a statue to honor Elsie Crisler Segar and his sailor. And Elsie based Popeye on a man from her childhood. Or his child. I'm not sure, is that a woman or not? We've talked about this before.
I think it's a man.
Okay. From his childhood.
Don't take that back. It might be a woman.
That's unlike most people, apparently. Well, not like a lot of people today. We think it's either a man or a woman. We don't have a lot of other choices. You know. But Popeye was based on a real person who, I've seen a picture of this guy, and he looks like the cartoon. He's got a little pipe in his mouth, and he talked to kids about how they should eat their spinach and all. So Popeye was a real person. So did not know that, did you?
Well, before we leave Texas, last week Matthew McConaughey was on the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, and he told the late night host he had just been at Six Flags Fiesta, Texas, in San Antonio, and he told on the show, he told how on the very last ride of the outing, his phone flew out of his pocket and into the swamp below, and he said, "I've been Mr. Dad with my jacket pockets, right? Everything's been buttoned up." But as the ride finished, his kids said they saw his phone fly over their heads during the last loop, right over a swamp.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, and the
did he get it back?
Well, the staff told McConaughey, the staff at Six Flags, told McConaughey They would look for his phone when the park was shut down for the day, and to his surprise, he found his phone in the mail the next evening. And it worked.
Well, we mentioned the Right to Life March in Washington yesterday. They do it every year. They've done it since the Supreme Court legalized abortion, somehow found in the Constitution the right to abortion. I challenge you to find the wording in there. But the Supreme Court, in their wisdom, legalized abortion on January 22nd, 1973, on the Roe versus Wade, which was a Texas case, by the way. The court established a right to abortion under the 14th Amendment. The Roe in the case, by the way, Norma McCorvey, her legal pseudonym was Jane Roe. She didn't want her name in the publicized. She died in 2017, by the way. But before she died, she traveled the country speaking in opposition to their decision, even though she was the one who pushed it and was on the pro-abortion side. But she changed her mind on abortion.
I thought she changed her mind back.
She did. I was about to say that.
Okay.
Shortly before she died, she claimed that it was all a lie and that she... So, obviously, I'm not a very trustworthy person. But Henry Wade... was on the other side prosecuting the pro-life side. He was the district attorney of Dallas County, and a little-known fact that, so he was big in the Roe versus Wade thing. He was on the Wade, well, it's Henry Wade, that's his name, Roe versus Wade. Well, Henry Wade, I say the pro-life portion of Roe versus Wade, was the district attorney of Dallas County. He also prosecuted Jack Ruby for killing Lee Harvey Oswald. Isn't that a odd little thing of history?
It is.
By the way, Allison and I were in a restaurant, and there's a couple that obviously they were dating from their conversation, which was very easy to hear. And we don't sit and listen to other people's conversations, but it was
unless they sound interesting.
Okay, there you go. But this was impossible to ignore because the Oliver Stone movie JFK had just come out, and of course about the assassination of John F. Kennedy, President Kennedy, and they were talking, and she had not seen the movie, he had seen the movie, and he says to her, "Well, it's about assassination," and he mentions Jack Ruby, and she says, "Well, who's Jack Ruby?" And he said, "Well, Jack Ruby is the one who assassinated Lee Harvey Oswald." And then she says, "Who's Lee Harvey Oswald?" Next, I expect her to say, "Who's John F. Kennedy?"
Yeah, yeah.
No. Whoa. I advise that guy to keep looking. Just keep looking. Oh, man.
Well, you know, you were talking about pets, keeping your pets warm during this frigid weather that we're having. Children that live with cats and dogs are less likely to develop food allergies. A Japanese study was done of more than 66,000 preschoolers. Kids that grew up around indoor dogs reported fewer egg, milk, and nut allergies, while indoor cats were linked to fewer egg, wheat, and soybean allergies.
Well, what do you know? I didn't know. Those are things that I didn't know.
However, children who are exposed to hamsters actually had a greater incidence of nut allergies.
What kind of allergies?
Nut.
Nut allergies. Well, that's interesting. Well, a little Texas, more Texas news. We had a lot of Texas news today. And little Texas factoids. As you may know, Texas, under Governor Abbott, installed a floating barrier on the Rio Grande, and if you've seen pictures or films of this, it would be tough to get across it. These gigantic, they look like huge weather balloons all linked together, keeping people from getting across the Rio Grande. And it was installed one of the busiest migrant crossing points at Eagle Pass, Texas. They put it in this past July. And it's part of the Operation Lone Star border security bills. Well, this Wednesday, of course, the federal government has sued to get it removed, just like they've sued in Eagle Pass about the park situation there, if you know about that. But the The federal government sued because they don't want to enforce the border, and they don't want Texas to enforce the border, although we have the constitutional right to do so. It's very specific in the Constitution that the Constitution says that it is doing this from memory, but it's up to the each state has the right to prevent invasion of its borders. And that's exactly what's happening. But on Wednesday, the Fifth Circuit, U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, ruled that it will allow the floating barrier to remain in place until the full court hears the case this coming May. So that's going to stay up. And as I mentioned, this park, Texas National Guard seized a park in Eagle Pass, where a lot of migrants, one of the key areas where migrants are coming in. And Texas, if you haven't heard, the National Guard showed up and kicked the Federal Border Patrol out, and they won't let them back in. And, of course, the federal government is, you know, clutching their pearls about this because they want as many illegal Democrats as possible to come in. The Department of Homeland Security issued Attorney General Paxton, Texas Attorney General, a cease and desist or a letter claiming that he shouldn't have done this and it's illegal and blah blah blah, and demanding that you remove the barriers to the federal border patrol agents by the end of the day this past Wednesday or face legal action from the federal government. Well, he basically said, you know, he didn't do it. Texas didn't do it. He responded and said, you know, legally you're all wet. We have the right to do this, and we're going to stand firm on it and keep, you know, we are holding fast on that area. So we'll see what happens in that, but so far we're in good shape. All right. Mm-hmm. Glad. So kudos to General Paxton and to Governor Abbott. And here is the state song of Texas.
And coming up after the break, we're going to have a truly shocking story, something that happened in Marble Falls.
Oh, my gosh. I know that story. It's horrible.
Yep. So we'll tell you all about that after the break.
We're Bill and Allison on the Hill Country Patriot, your information station, and here's a little bit of the Texas state song.
Single star sends out its radiance to nations near and far, emblem of freedom. It sets our hearts aglow with thoughts of San Jacinto and glorious Alamo. God bless you, Texas, and keep you brave and strong, that you may grow in power and word throughout the ages long. God bless you, Texas, and keep you brave and strong, that you may grow in power and word throughout the ages long.
Welcome back. We're Bill and Allison. And that song was by Cream. And Bill has a delightful story about his experience with Cream.
Oh, you want me to tell that story?
I do.
Okay. This was a few years ago, as you'll be able to tell. There was a concert by Cream, and the opening act was the Mothers of Invention, Frank Zappa's Mothers of Invention. And I was a big Mothers of Invention fan, so didn't know much about Cream at the time. Went, and the first, as I said, the opening act was Mothers of Invention with Frank Zappa. And when they were finished and Cream came on, I just went backstage. And there was it was in a very old building in Chicago, actually, the Chicago Stadium, where the Blackhawks used to play, and very old building. And they didn't have any security, so I just wandered back. I was a college kid, and I brought my little recorder. I worked at the college radio station, and brought my little tape recorder, hoping to get Frank Zappa to do a promo for the station and for my show. And went into the locker room, which was the musician's dressing room. The only person in there was Frank Zappa, and I introduced myself, and he was so friendly to me. He did a couple of promos for me, and I'd brought an album of his, of the Mothers of Invention, and it was a parody, actually, of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper album, and they had all their pictures of all the guys in the band on there, and goofy poses and things, and so Frank Zappa signed it to me, and put a little balloon above his head, "Hello, Bill," I remember, and then he said, "Well, don't you want the other guy's autographs?" And I said, "Sure." I'm not going to, what do I say, no? So he takes me, and we wander all over the arena while Cream is playing, going up the balcony, finding the members of Mothers of Invention, the other musicians, and he says, "Here, autograph this for Bill." And so I got every one of those guys' autograph. And I will never forget how kind Frank Zappa was to a, as he called me, a snotty little college kid, jokingly. So I've always had a special place in my heart for Frank Zappa. So that's my story.
Well, and we also have a story about Frank Zappa's burial place.
Yes, he, well, you tell the story.
Well, do you remember the name of the cemetery? Cemetery in...
Westwood Village in L.A. I don't know if that's officially the name of the cemetery, but it's in Westwood.
Yeah, there are a huge number of stars buried there. And Frank Zappa's grave is not marked. Now, we figured out where it was because we had a map, but it's not marked because he was afraid people would deface it.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I don't know.
But. I don't. Well, he was a controversial guy because he believed in, you know, in free speech. And Al Gore's wife at the time, I've forgotten her first name.
Tipper
Gore. She's still living? I don't know. Anyway, you don't hear about her. So. Mm-mm. But she was very big in wanting to censor lyrics on records.
Mm-hmm.
And so... He testified at the same hearing that she testified, really attacking her, and apparently he got a lot of bad, threats and things like that. So that may be the reason he was afraid people would deface his grave. I don't know.
Yeah.
But great guy.
Well, I told her we had a story about took place in Marble Falls. What happened was, and the story was in the San Antonio paper this past week, and it also appeared in People magazine, a Miami woman came to Marble Falls for dental surgery, but she was left with severe brain damage after the surgery. She has now been hospitalized after an alleged fentanyl overdose. She nearly died from the 2022 incident. She now lives in an assisted living facility in Florida, where she requires a feeding tube. Her husband filed a civil medical malpractice complaint against the dental practice on allegations of negligence. The anesthesiologist, and an anesthesiologist is a doctor, And they're very important during surgery because they monitor your vital signs and they decide if you need more medication or less. And they carefully monitor you. However, this anesthesiologist administered 400 micrograms of fentanyl to the woman. And the doctor died from cancer 2 weeks after the incident. He was distraught and was allegedly dealing with cognitive issues at the time of this dental surgery gone wrong. But according to the woman's husband, after she was administered fentanyl, her vital signs began to drop and she suddenly went into respiratory arrest, which led her to suffer brain damage and thus a coma. And there are pictures of her in People magazine before and after, the way she looks today. And it's absolutely horrible. Mm-hmm. The night before the surgery, the anesthesiologist's wife reported him missing to the police after he went on an evening walk and never returned. When he did return, he told police he was dehydrated and disoriented and refused medical attention. Next morning, His wife said she drove him to work. So at work, the anesthesiologist never told his co-workers about how he went missing the night before, but he went on to administer excessive amounts of fentanyl to the woman, the husband alleges in his lawsuits. The woman came from Miami, where she lived, to Marble Falls to have this elective dental surgery to repair cavitations after watching a video on Instagram, which is posted by a social media influencer with about 1.9 million followers. The influencer had uploaded a video about the purported medical issue that featured the Marble Falls dentists discussing its problems and remedies. Now, I've never... Have you ever heard of anything like that? Cavitations?
No, it's some...
We need to ask our dentist.
But our dentist is Neil Collins in Kerrville.
Shout out to Neil. but the doctors, in this video, said that cavitations are wounds in the mouth where teeth have been pulled, such as wisdom teeth, where toxicity can rival that of a gangrenous wound. Well, I'll tell you, I've had several, wisdom type teeth pulled, and I've never had a problem.
I don't know.
But the doctor is seeking an unspecified amount in damages from the doctors and the dental office. He has already reached a settlement with the anesthesiologist estate last month. This anesthesiologist had previously had his medical license suspended from 2016 to 2019, after allegedly stealing medicine and testing positive for fentanyl.
Oh, nice.
The same year his suspension ended in 2019, he was hired by the dental practice in Marble Falls. How about that?
Wow.
You think they would bother to check on things like that?
Well, how do you know? How does a patient know what the background of somebody is and all that? You trust your doctor and yipes.
Yeah.
That's horrible. Horrible. Well, on that same subject, actually, sort of, dysfunctional people, the Federal Aviation Administration, which is run by... Mayor Pete, Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg, the FAA, as everybody knows, a government agency charged with regulating civil aviation. They employ 45,000 people, approximately. And among other areas, they're in charge of air traffic controllers, who are one of the highest stress jobs there is, and the people are supposed to keep airplanes from running into each other. Speaking, by the way, of high stress jobs, Allison, did you know that... what do you think is the deadliest job in the country? What would be the deadliest job? And by that, I mean the chances of you dying while you're doing this job is the highest in the country.
Air traffic controller?
Well, that's close. The answer is President of the United States.
Oh, okay.
Your chances of dying... as president of the United States, historically, about 1 in 10 U.S. presidents have been killed in the job. About 1 in 10. About that. Anyway, going back to the FAA, they're in charge of air traffic controllers, and it's recently been revealed. This is hard to believe. I had to do Allison and I both had to do a lot of background research on this because it's been revealed that the FAA is actively recruiting workers who suffer, in their words, quote, severe intellectual disabilities, psychiatric problems, and other mental and physical conditions because they're doing diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI. And it's spelled out on the agency's website. And if you go to the FAA... Federal Aviation Administration website, here's what it says, quote, targeted disabilities are those disabilities that the federal government, as a matter of policy, has identified for special emphasis in recruitment and hiring. They include hearing, vision, missing extremities, partial paralysis, complete paralysis, epilepsy, severe intellectual disability, psychiatric disability, and dwarfism. And this is all comes under their diversity and inclusion hiring plan, which claims, quote, diversity is integral to achieving FAA's mission of ensuring safe and efficient travel across our nation by hiring air traffic controllers who are psychotic and have severe intellectual disabilities. On the FAA's website, they claim that people with what they call, quote, severe mental and physical disabilities are the most underrepresented segment of the FAA. Well, I would hope so. You know, they don't explain how hiring people with hearing and vision disabilities, complete paralysis, epilepsy, severe intellectual and psychiatric disabilities will make airplane travel safer. Unreal. Unreal. When we come back, I think something the lighter side of that story. So stay tuned. We'll be back in just a couple of moments.
Welcome back. We're Bill and Allison, Hill Country Patriot, your information station.
And you can tune in to us every Saturday from 8 to 10 in the morning. And also, you can catch us at hillcountrypatriot.com during that time to listen live. And we're also have our own website.
Mm-hmm. firstcoupleoftexasradio.com.
So visit us at firstcoupleoftexasradio.com and you can download our programs and put them on your favorite digital device. Well, before the break, we were talking about how the FAA is actively searching for air traffic controllers who have complete paralysis, severe intellectual disability, psychiatric disability, etc. You know, that they don't explain how that's going to make airplane travel safer, but it is called the Diversity and Inclusion Hiring Plan. Do you want to fly in an airplane where they prioritize diversity, equity, and inclusion hiring over your safety? Well, that is actually happening.
Welcome aboard, folks. We are very proud to share that your pilot is the most diverse pilot on record. She is a 3'2" transgender pansexual Native American man who identifies as a 6-foot-tall Korean woman. Any volunteers to help reach the controls are welcome. You will want to buckle up as her epilepsy is often triggered by the flashing lights in the cockpit. Remember to keep a whisper volume level as she may have to consult instructional videos as a refresher during the flight. Now, can we get a big cheer for diversity?
Yeah, there you go. that's about what it's going to be, you know. But on a serious note, you should seriously consider flying. And particularly United Airlines. We want to take a slap at United Airlines right now. Scott Kirby is the CEO of United Airlines. And this is kind of hard to believe. So Allison and I found Scott Kirby, the CEO of United Airlines, telling you exactly what he thinks about hiring.
How is diversity and diversity targets working into the Aviate Academy?
We have committed that 50% of the class of the classes will be women or people of color. Today, only 19% of our pilots at United Airlines are women or people of color. And by the way, from all the data I've seen, that's the highest of any airline in the country.
White males don't just dominate in the cockpits, also in the C-suite at United Airlines.
Well, look, at United, I'm proud of the diversity that we actually have in our C-suite. I think if you look around corporate America.
Correct me if I'm saying, though, this is just based off your website, the people you list as executives, but out of 11 people, 3 are women. I believe 1 is a person of color.
That's correct. But, you know, in corporate America, I think, you know.
That's a low bar. How do you raise your own bar?
Well, a lot of this is, you know, focusing on it. We have programs to, one of the things we do is for every job when we do an interview, we require women and people of color to be involved in the interview process, bringing people in early in their careers as well, and giving them those opportunities and creating a stronger bench.
Yeah, that's the United Airlines Chief Executive Officer, Scott Kirby, who doesn't care whether or not they can effectively fly an airplane. All that matters is race and gender. He admits it. He admits it. So DEI, which is diversity, equity, and inclusion. I'm sure you've heard a lot about that. DEI, otherwise known as woke racism, is going to get people killed. I mean, some endeavors simply don't lend themselves to identity politics, like keeping you safe in an airplane.
Have you ever boarded a plane and thought to yourself, I hope the pilot is a transgender refugee? Have you ever gone to the emergency room and said, I hope my medical team is incredibly diverse? Have you ever moved to a new city and said, I hope the police department hit its equity goals for the year? If your answer to these questions was no, if you just wanted the most qualified candidates for the job, then you are normal. But we have a lot of very not normal people running America these days. Left-wing politicians believe skin color or gender identity should determine who gets the job. Democrats used to care about the middle class. Now they just care about your race and your gender.
You know what woke means? It means you're a loser. Everything woke turns to shit, okay?
There you go. There you go. Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, man. We got weird stuff going on. What you got, Allison? You're too busy running the show, is it? Allison runs the board here. She's our engineer.
Here's a little factoid.
Yeah.
Probably not very many people know. Cows face north or south to graze. They do this all over the world.
You told me that before. In fact, you told Amanda that. Mm-hmm. Our friend in Harper, and she has cattle, and at first she said what, and then she said, now that I think about it, they do. She said they, even when it's more convenient to face another way, they'll face either north or south to drink and to eat,
to graze.
I'll be done. So if you're ever lost and you don't know where north and south are, if you see some cattle, they're facing north or south, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You don't know which, though. That's the problem. They won't tell you. Cattle are notorious for ignoring your orders and not having conversations, I'll tell you. Well, how do you like this? The state of Massachusetts, the governor, Maura Healey, a Democrat, of course, Massachusetts, is asking private homeowners to take in illegal aliens into their homes. Yeah, quote, if you have an extra room or suite in your home, please consider hosting a family. Oh, my gosh. They're currently hosting more.
Well, at least they're just asking for volunteers.
Well, as of now, but they may have the legal power.
I was going to say, just wait.
May have the legal or pretend they have the legal power to make you do it. They're currently housing more than 1,400 families in 40 hotels in 28 cities at taxpayer expense, room and board, free for the illegal aliens. According, the average stay for these families is 14 months of free room and board. Massachusetts has a right to housing law for families. Doesn't cover single people, but they're going to do it. In 2022, Massachusetts housed 15 immigrant families free of charge. In 2023, that number shot up to nearly 2,000, the vast majority being illegals, of course. According to Howie Carr, the Boston Herald columnist, he said, Joe Biden and his crew have turned what was a decent, if woke, neighborhoods into a Bidenville. The illegals are up all night driving their unregistered scooters everywhere. Needles litter the gutters. The illegals are harassing young American girls and verbally abusing adults. So is the state going to take responsibility for guaranteeing the safety of homeowners who've elected to take in illegals? How do they know if these people have criminal records? What about diseases that have once been considered wiped out, nearly wiped out in the United States? I mean, these people are already okay with breaking our laws. They're illegals. So if you want to move to Massachusetts, be my guest. But it's not going to happen to me or to Allison. Or to most sane people, or to any sane person as far as that's concerned. Well, we are Bill and Allison. When we come back, we're going to be talking about events in the Hill Country that you'll want to know about.
And also, very important, interview we had with Lorraine Lamont about an abortion.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, absolutely,
you've got to hear this. You've got to hear what Lorraine has to say. We'll be back right after the news break. Stay tuned.
Now, the first couple of Texas Radio. Here's Bill and Allison Mancaro.
Well, thank you for that introduction.
Thank you, Bob.
Yes, we are Bill and Allison.
Yeah, thank you, Bob. Bob Harmon, who is a mainstay of this Ranch Radio Group.
We have a special guest in the studio today. She's used to being in the studio because she's a host on Hill Country Patriot, 10 o'clock every weekday morning, Lorraine Lamont.
That's right.
And we were having a meeting of Hill Country Patriot people, and Lorraine told us the most incredible story. And we wanted to have her on to talk about it. And I said, I couldn't tell her story because I would cry. And I'll probably cry while she's telling it.
Well, yes, it is. It is a very interesting story. And I didn't tell it a lot because it would just, I could see people's emotions. I could see what it would do. It's not the kind of party conversation. You know, pass me the hors d'oeuvres. Let me tell you about an abortion.
No.
Something happens usually there. So I decided that I wanted to do this, and then I think what I call God opened the door. You know, I really believe he opens the door for when he wants you to be able to go places, do things. There it is. That just happened. So serendipitous as it may be. But my story goes back, raised in the inner city of Detroit, of course. A lot of people know a little bit about that. And being raised in the inner city of Detroit, one of the things that I did notice, and of course right now with today, abortion and all that is happening, and right to life, and the way they're just, you know, treating babies as if they're just nothing. They're not even tissue anymore. They're just an inconvenience, period.
And you mentioned how prevalent abortions were among blacks when you were growing up in Detroit.
And that's where I was going. Absolutely. You're right. And so and it's almost like you could find an abortion. Doctors were given abortion like revolving doors. Here's the deal. Just like revolving doors. It was nothing. So every doctor, it wasn't like you had to go find a clinic. Every doctor would automatically. Wow. It's just not a problem. At least most of them did. And one particular doctor, And I'll say his name now that he's deceased and no one really knows who he is. I think when I saw him years ago, he was in his 90s. So now it's been years ago. But anyway, he was a German doctor, Dr. Yarris. And Dr. Yarris, he would give abortions a lot. My mother had been coming as one of the women going in and out, having abortions and so forth and so on. And then eventually, they didn't trust him because they believed that he was just collecting the government check. And so they would say to him, we need to see the fetus. And this is gross of you. This is going to gross you out. You know, just get ready. You know, buckle up. Put your arms and legs inside of the car. It's always a wild ride. No, you're probably not used to me shouting and screaming as the authentic certified neighborhood girl. But the story deserves this type of ambiance to it. And so I grew up in the inner city of Detroit. My mother, again, had... It was five of us all together, one brother that I never saw. But my mother began to break up, divorces, all kinds of stuff, and we were left kind of raising ourselves. I get to be about 12 years old, and everybody starts leaving home. I don't know what that was about. Everybody starts leaving home. All my older sisters start leaving home. My mother's going through an issue with my stepdad, and she starts leaving home and leaving on the weekends, coming back on Monday. Pretty soon she starts leaving the opposite, not come back at all. A long time. And so anyway, so time went on, but I kept lying to the schools and telling them that I had a parent at home. Really, I was signing everything myself. And so eventually I'm 16 years old, getting ready to graduate early. Why? Because in those days, if you went to summer school, you could actually graduate a half a year earlier. Each year you kept doing it, kept getting earlier and earlier. So I did. And so I'm staying at home by myself. The little Polish lady behind me is actually having the owns a house, but she's staying in the apartment upstairs over a garage. And so I knew no one was there, but I was very small now, but I was even smaller then. And then when I knew that I came home one Friday, but only come home on Fridays to get my clothes and go stay at other people's homes so that I could see what a family looked like, having dinner and so forth and so on. I saw a shadow moving when I came home that Friday through the window. I was very afraid of that. I was very afraid, and I says, I don't know if I should go in. And I looked closer, and I saw it was my mother. I was like, oh, yay. So I opened the door real fast, and she says, hey, baby, how you doing? Come on in. You know, and so I know it sounds like it's just like she was just saying good morning to your neighbor, but that's the way it was then. And so I came in, and she said, but I've got something to tell you. And then she starts, she said, but I'm out of cigarettes. I need you to run and get me some cigarettes. Don't everybody die right now. You can buy cigarettes then. And so she said, I want you to go get me some cigarettes. I said, okay. And all the way into the store, I'm thinking, she says, she wants to talk to me. Wait a minute. What did she want to talk to me about? This is not the time to be mama. You haven't been mama in, you know, in the past 2-3 years. What do you want to know? And so I'm thinking all kind of questions, rushing through my mind. I get back. She sit down. I didn't tell you this part, and I'll tell you this part. She pops, she lights a cigarette, and she hands me one.
And you're 16.
Yeah, yeah. She hands me one, and she lights
one. She introduced you to smoking.
Yeah, exactly. And she opens a can of beer, and she pours it in a little cup, and she says, I know you're smoking. I know you're smoking. You're probably smoking. You're probably drinking, too. I would never forget that. Right now, the cigarette... but the beer I wasn't drinking, but everything just went into a maze. Like, okay, what is this? Is this a setup? What's going on? Okay, all right. I'm thinking, all right, and I'm holding the cigarette though, but I'm turning my hands are going back and forth, and finally I just throw it in the ashtray. I'm looking at her in the face. What is the deal? And she says, you know, I need to tell you something. She said, when I was pregnant with you, I had an abortion. And I look at her. I says, okay, you know, I may be.
What?
Okay, Mom, whatever you're on, you need to stop it, like, right now. Obviously, it ain't this beer. But you, right. She says, no, baby. She says, you know, Dr. Yaros. I says, I know. My sister said, use them. All the people in the black community had used them. He was probably getting filthy rich from, you know, government. Just abortions like a revolving door. And later on, then you could find Planned Parenthood places like that, like, better than you could find the nearest Kmart store. You could quickly get an abortion. And so she says, well, one day I went in to get an abortion. She says, and as I had done many times before, she says, and when I went in, she said, he showed me the fetus and whatever, and I went back home. She says, but I kept growing. I says, and she says, and I went back, and I called him. She says, Dr. Yaris, I'm growing. Oh, I did nothing's wrong with you. Your body is going to still go through the transitions. It's normal. And she said, no, doctor. She said, I really am. All right, you make an appointment. Come on in. So she made the appointment, and she came in. And when she came in, she actually, he put her up on the table. And then when he went to examine her, he says, this is too much. Now, I'm just going to go and tell you. This is not worth it. You know, this is wasting my time, wasting your time. And when he went to examine her, all of a sudden, his chair, which was on wheels, he pushed himself back. And he pushed his back against the wall and did some sort of Roman Catholic German cross sign. I don't know what kind of witchy, whatever he was doing. And he says, do never come see me ever again. You. And the word that he used was something like about, you are voodoo to me. This is voodoo. This is bad luck. And he said that. And then he told her that there was a baby still there. Now, how does that happen? That happened very, very easily because there was a setup, what I call the DS factor, divine setup. It was meant for me to be born. That baby was me, my mother says. And so what was it? A difference? How many centimeters? What away? Separate sac twins, they called it then. It's another more medical term for it now. But it being a separate sac twin, whoever was at the front of the canal first went out first. I think sometimes someone say that God hid me. One person said God hid me. I think of the Esau Jacob. I think that there was a little warring going on in the belly, and the twins and the one before me fought me, pulled back my heel, and switched places.
Wow.
Yes. That's an incredible story.
Yes.
Incredible
story. I'm alive today, and I know that it's God. I call it the DS factor, the divine setup. Nobody can. And when I think of the way they treat lives, and in the African-American community, I mean like water, like drinking water, unbelievable. At this point, I don't know how many millions and millions and millions of babies, 9 million, we have actually aborted a nation, and it's increasing. And in my book I'm doing, which is Black by Popular Demand, it's a series, a 5-point series. The first one is Pimps, Politicians, and Crooked Preachers. And I'm going to make them easy reads. I thought it was going to be all one book, but it's really too much. And the second one is going to have a lot to do with Stop Drinking the Kool-Aid, Five Easy Ways How to Leave the Plantation. And the third one is really going to be Who's Really Killing Black People? You know, from the black-on-black crime to the abortions, who's really killing black people? And I'm on every night at Nightcap at 9, Facebook Live. Now, I started it, I did it a couple of years ago with all the crazies, but now I'm on at night, Nightcap at 9, I call it. And so for about 40 minutes to an hour, it's supposed to have only been like 30 minutes, I talk about whatever I crazily screamed that day, bring it down on a lower voice, and we talk about it.
Well, and but Bill, why don't you talk about Margaret Sanger, and Lorraine referred to Planned Parenthood, and the reason that Planned Parenthood was established in the first place.
Margaret Sanger was to kill black people. Eugenics.
Yeah. Eugenics.
Planned Parenthood hails founder Margaret Sanger as a champion of civil rights. But one thing they don't talk about is the racism behind her fight to legalize abortion. A group of African-American leaders want to focus attention on her ideology and how it affected black birth rates. Abigail Robertson has more on this story.
Margaret Sanger strived for a society that limited births to only those she deemed fit to have children.
Well, I think the greatest sin in the world is bringing children into the world.
Many pro-choice advocates see her as a hero, but critics call her a racist eugenics promoter who targeted black communities with her Planned Parenthood clinics.
Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, once said, colored people are like weeds, they need to be exterminated.
People don't understand that 79% of Planned Parenthood clinics are located in minority communities, and that minority communities shoulder a disproportionate amount of abortion.
Dr. King says while African Americans make up only 13% of the U.S. population, over 30% of aborted babies are from black mothers.
Under the veil of secrecy and deception, 60 plus million babies have not been born because they were aborted legally since 73. One third of that population belong to the African American community.
I have a real serious concern about the number of abortions that's taking place in the minority community, particularly the black community, and that I see this as a form of genocide.
Planned Parenthood receives around $500 million each year from taxpayers.
As a matter of fact, I don't know if it's still on, but it may be. There is a YouTube channel with her talking to a talk show host.
Oh.
And he says, wasn't there a point in time when you made this statement that, well, you think that you're doing black people a favor? If they're going to grow up and be, she says, well, I just think that if they're going to grow up and be criminals and be put in jail and look at all the things, you're not doing them a favor, but you're kind of saving a lot of trouble. And so, yes, Margaret Sanger, she's rolling in her grave, clapping her hands, because she is still having her vision, her goal is actually being accomplished big time, probably never more than she really thought it could be to mm-hmm. this degree. It is. And when I look at my son, when I met Richard, before I met Richard, I had already had two kids by myself and a single parent. And I remember looking at them and realizing my life had changed because of their life, you know, and that because of them, I could not live the life I continue to live. You know, but somehow in today's vernacular, they get us to believe children are inconvenience. This is a mistake. I don't need it right now. So forth and so on. And when you give me my, I don't want to go off on you. I'm sorry. When you go to my body, my choice, I like want to, you know, I lose it right there because I figure, Listen here, KK, Ray, Ray, Mamie, and anybody else, your choice is to use one of those contraceptives.
Exactly.
Your choice is to stop laying up with people and having partners and all everywhere you go. Your choice is to do that. How about that? And then if you don't want the baby, give it to someone else. I love the Right to Life programs. I just want to give them a little plug because they're finding ways, especially churches, organizations are finding ways how to say, okay, I'll take the baby. Make it easy for you to carry the baby and we will find a home for the baby. We will help you. This helps you make the decision, you know. So there's been a lot when I think about my life and my twins' life. Everybody say, Lorraine, why do you work the way you work? Why do you get up in the morning, have a nonprofit for 20 years, do a radio station, work on a book, been to 17 countries. I says, well, you know, I think I'm living for two people.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
That's great.
Wow. We're talking to Lorraine Lamond. Lorraine has a program, as I'm sure most people know who are listening, here on the Hill Country Patriot, your information station. She's on Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. right here. If you like what you heard now, you'll love it when you listen to Lorraine.
You remember in the Bible when they were about to kill, when they were Moses, when there had been a prophecy that Moses was going to be born, and then also when Jesus was going to be born, the pharaohs and the kings were killing. Do you remember that?
Yes.
I mean, just kill anybody under 2 years old, just whack them out.
Exactly.
I really believe it's annihilation of a generation, because prophetically speaking, I believe there's a generation, the Bible even says it, there's a generation that had not been born yet that should grow up and do exploits. And I tell young people, you are that generation. When I see babies, I say, welcome. We've been waiting on you. We need you now.
Well, that was great, wasn't it?
Yeah. Lorraine Lamond. Be sure to tune in for her every weekday right here on the Hill Country Patriot, your information station, at 10 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Following Matt Long.
That's right.
Who follows Harley David Ballou.
That's right. And coming up after the break, we're going to tell you about the Department of Justice report on the shooting in Uvalde at the Robb Elementary School.
Yeah, that report just came out. We'll also be telling you what were the best signs at the March for Life in Washington yesterday. You'll love some of these signs. We'll be back in just a moment on the Bill and Allison Mencaro Show, right here on the Hill Country Patriot, your information station.
Welcome back. We're Bill and Allison. Now, earlier, we were talking about, I heard it through the grapevine, and we were speculating as to who performed it, and it was...
Well, you nailed it, Allison.
I nailed it.
I didn't.
Smokey Robinson and the Miracles.
Yeah. I thought it was Pee Wee Herman.
You'd be wrong.
I would be wrong. Yeah.
Well, I mentioned before the break that the Department of Justice has issued a report... on the Uvalde Robb Elementary School shooting on May 24th, 2022. And they said that the law enforcement response on May 24th was an unimaginable failure, and that a lack of action by adults.
Yeah, I mean,
failed
the
to
shooter
protect,
might as well have had police protection for all that happened.
They failed to protect children and their teachers. This shooting is widely regarded as an egregious law enforcement failures. There were 380 law enforcement officers from 24 agencies, local, state, and federal. But they couldn't come up with a plan to confront the gunman quickly. Children were calling 911 from inside the classroom, begging to be rescued. Police did not enter for 77 minutes, allowing children and teachers to be killed. Had law enforcement followed generally accepted practices in an active shooter situation and gone right after the shooter to stop him, lives would have been saved. People would have survived. 21 people were killed, and the review also found that the chaotic police response prevented some survivors from receiving timely medical care. 11 officers arrived within the first few minutes of the rampage, and that would have been enough to confront the shooter. But only 6 tried to go to the classroom where the shooter was located, and they retreated once 2 officers were hit by shrapnel.
Yeah, they were afraid of...
Yeah. Only 1 tried to approach the classroom again, according to the report. At least 5 officers have lost their jobs over... this response, including a police chief and 2 DPS officers. Security footage from the school shows law enforcement personnel in the hallway near the classroom where the kids were being killed.
Oh, we've seen that video.
Yeah.
They're just hanging out there while there's gunfire. You can hear the gunfire, and they're just, you know, dithering among themselves, clutching their pearls. Well, what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
If we go in there, we might get hurt ourselves.
Yeah.
Good God.
Yeah, the school district dismissed their entire police force, and they hired new officers,
and a new chief. And the superintendent retired under pressure.
Yeah, to spend more time with his family.
Yeah, brother.
Well, there were estimated 100,000 people marching for life in Washington yesterday. And including, by the way, the new Speaker of the House was there, Mike Johnson, and he spoke. And they're going to be one thing that they marched for, or at least, the people didn't march for it, but the leaders of the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America said its political priorities include boosting funding to pregnancy resource centers. Well, you know, that sounds good. Oh, yeah, give them more money. Or give them money at all. They don't get tax money. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in federal funding of anything except national defense and the justice system. That's basically my position. But once you start getting federal money, U.S. taxpayers' money, strings are always attached to it. That's happened in, I believe it's Sweden, if memory serves, where private Christian schools are accepting government money, and they have to teach stuff that ain't Christian. Believe me. So once you accept government money, your hands are tied. If they say, you'd get dependent upon it. We've seen this over and over again. That's why state governments are so weak, because they're depending on federal funding, and the federal government threatens to pull their funding for schools or whatever it might be unless they fall into line. So I don't think that pregnancy centers, as much as I believe in them, should be taking taxpayers' money. But on the lighter side, here are some of the best signs at the March for Life. Come on, Joe, even you love kids, one sign. Americans are born to be free if only they were free to be born. Some other signs, Planned Parenthood equals racist government-funded murder. Another one is Let God Plan Parenthood. And let's see, what else have they got? No one should be killed because they are inconvenient. A true feminist would fight for the rights of unborn women. How about that one? Real men stand for life. Another sign, as a former fetus, I oppose abortion. Another one, four of my siblings were aborted. Choose life. Another one is, your mom chose life. Another sign noted, hey, GOP, we vote pro-life first. So there you go. That was the March for Life yesterday in Washington, with an estimated 100,000 people marched for life on the second anniversary of the Dobbs decision, which struck down the ridiculous Roe versus Wade decision legalizing abortion.
Well, here's something interesting that was posted, I believe it's on Facebook, and someone forwarded it to me. I just got a call, and I'm quoting, I just got a call from a 304 area code, thinking it was someone I know in West Virginia. I answered. It was a man claiming to be from customer service. He didn't say what company, only customer service.
Well, there's a tip-off right there.
Yeah. The first thing he asked was, can you hear me? I remembered something that I saw on Facebook, saying people are calling and asking if you can hear them, then using recording of your yes reply as a way to sign you up for all kinds of stuff. So I replied, I hear you, to which he again asked, so you can hear me? Me, I hear you. Him, I just need a yes or no. Me, I hear you. The man hung up. So thanks to whoever posted that story.
Yeah, don't say yes, because they'll take your voice and and say, well, you agreed to this. Mm-hmm. We have a recording of you saying yes when we asked you if you would buy this, subscribe to this, you know, weekly shipment of whatever crap they want to sell you. Yeah. Well, this is an interesting time. It's Elvis Presley was born in 1935, not long ago, and we thought we'd pay tribute to him, but here is a very weird thing about Elvis.
Happy
Yeah, as I said, Elvis was born this month in 1935. It would be his 89th birthday this month. Can you imagine Elvis Presley, 89 years old?
I can't believe it.
Ooh, ooh. He was once, by a Florida judge, once called Elvis a savage because he believed that Elvis's music was undermining the youth.
The youths.
You remember that it was it's controversial because he would swing his pelvis. He was called Elvis the Pelvis. And when he was on the Ed Sullivan Show, they only showed him from the waist up.
That's right.
Because we don't want to corrupt the youths.
We saw an Elvis impersonator in Las Vegas, and we were with friends who were really excited about going, and Bill and I did not want to go, but we humored our friends, and we absolutely loved it. The guy was great.
He was really,
really good.
He was really great. So to honor Elvis, he's got a lot of number one hits. It's hard to pick one of them, but this is one of Allison and my favorites.
Oh, well, bless my soul, what's wrong with me? Single, itching like a man on a fuzzy tree. My friends say I'm acting wild as a bug. I'm in love, I'm all shook up. Yeah. Well, my hands are shaky and my knees are weak. I can't seem to stand on my own 2 feet. Who do you think of when you have such a look? I'm in love, I'm all shook up. Yeah. Oh, please don't ask me what's on my mind. I'm a little shook up, but I feel fine. When I'm near the girl that I love best, you know, my heart excuse me to death when she touched my hand. Up on the chill I got, her lips are like a bargain on its side. I'm proud to say that she's my but a good.
Hey, thank you, Elvis. We appreciate it. Happy birthday. Happy 89th birthday, if you can believe that. Elvis Presley. Well, when we come back, the Bill and Allison Show, we'll tell you why Nikki Haley's campaign is probably dead. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back. We're Bill and Allison on Hill Country Patriot. You can hear us every Saturday, 8 to 10, hillcountrypatriot.com, or you can hear our back shows at firstcoupleoftexasradio.com.
Yeah, we'd like to have you visit that website and see some of the things, hear some of the things we've talked about in the past, and download them to your favorite digital device and take them wherever you go. Well, I told you about Nikki Haley. Her campaign is probably dead. And the reason for that is Senator, Nikki Haley used to be governor of South Carolina. Well, the current senator, Tim Scott, senator, U.S. senator from South Carolina, has just endorsed Donald Trump.
Just last night.
So that is probably a fatal blow to her campaign. First of all, she was expected to come in second in the Iowa caucus. She came in third, a close third, but she came in third. And she said after the speech, or after the votes were in, she said, well, this is now a two-person race. And I'm thinking, well, you came in third. Are you referring to DeSantis? So it's now DeSantis versus Trump and you're out? Is that your concession speech? I wish I'd been a reporter to ask her that.
Well, and the Republicans who did vote for her, they were polled afterwards, and they said if Trump is the nominee, they would, half of them said they would vote for Biden over Trump.
Yeah. So
it tells you something about her supporters.
Exactly. Exactly. Her supporters are Democrats or rhinos, Republicans in name only. Senator Rand Paul said that he's against Haley. He says she seems to care more about Ukraine's border than the U.S. southern border. He said, I think Trump, DeSantis, Ramaswamy have all had significant misgivings and criticism of sending more money to Ukraine. I think all three of those candidates would be less likely to get us involved in a war than Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley's never seen a war that she didn't like. And he says, Rand Paul says, I want to ensure that true conservative and libertarian voters know that, quote, Nikki Haley doesn't represent us. And I'm very, very concerned that if she were president, that she'd get us involved in foreign wars, he said. I mean, you know, I understand because she lost Iowa, she wanted to bomb it. Rand Paul pointed out large corporate interests are backing her. A lot of Democrats are going to be voting for her in primaries, crossing over, and when they have where they have open primaries. He says they frankly have Trump derangement syndrome, and they hate Donald Trump so much they want anybody but Trump. He said that doesn't just occur on the Democrat side. There are some corporate wealthy folks on the Republican side, the establishment people. They don't care about the border. They want cheap labor. That's the thing. The Chamber of Commerce folks and the big corporations and the multi-billionaires, they want cheap labor, and they don't care what happens to our country. They don't care that these people are going to be Democrats because they support both sides. And this, you know, there ain't a dime's worth of difference, basically. But they don't care about the deficit. They only care about their particular industry, Rand Paul said, and they give to both parties. Well, he said what I just said. Rand Paul went on to say, so many of the people that are donors now to Nikki Haley are Democrats that give to both parties. And he started a website called NeverNikki.net, NeverNikki.net. So you might want to check that out. Well, I was glad to see that temps are going to be in the 40s today, and that'll give us a chance to play with our new dog. We have a new doggie, and her name is Anna, and she's a 2.5-year-old standard poodle, and she's absolutely extremely smart and obedient, and we are so blessed. We can't believe the Lord blessed us so much with Anna, and she loves to play ball. If you say the word ball to her, she gets all excited, and we go out and throw the ball with her, and she runs it, goes and grabs it, and trots it back to us, and we keep doing this over and over and over. And she is the only dog I've ever seen that plays by herself. She takes that ball. If you let her just have the ball, she kicks it around with her paws. And she'll do this. I mean, I don't know how long she'd do it. Eventually, you know, you'd think she'd stop. But she just kicks it around, plays with it. It scoots away from her, and she runs after it. And she's just constantly just by herself. So it's amazing. And when she's done playing ball, where we're throwing the ball and she's running to get it, when she's decided that she's had enough of that, instead of bringing the ball back to us, she'll go up to the door with the ball. And in other words, I'm done. So she's great. So that's Anna. We'll bring her into the studio sometime, and maybe teach her how to run the board, Allison. Then
there you go.
You won't have to do that. Well, it's not an air raid. Nothing to be concerned about. This is the Bill and Allison Woke Alert. If you're a regular listener, you know that we spend a lot of time sifting through trying to find the stupidest wokeness that we can find for every show. And it's a tough job. There's so many candidates. So we've got a lot piled up to go. The Methodist Church of Great Britain has called on its ministers, deacons, and elders to stop using offensive terminology. Well, there's nothing wrong with that, is there, Allison?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. Well, the offensive terminology includes words like husband, wife, son, daughter, father, mother, brother, sister. Those are offensive. The Methodist Church of Great Britain wants its leaders to begin using terms such as partner, child, and parent instead of some of those words, siblings. Because using those other terms like son, daughter, father, mother, etc., doesn't take into account our non-binary friends, is what they say. Mm-hmm. And the Methodist Church of Great Britain says if you want any addition to a members, if you want any additional guidance, the church is telling its members to consult radical leftist pro-trans, pro-gay groups such as GLAAD and Stonewall. Biblically, the Methodist Church has nowhere to stand, no support at all in the Bible. Use of the terms husband and wife abounds in the Bible. In Ephesians chapter 5, each one of you must also love his wife as he loves himself. Mark 10, but at the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. But the Methodist Church of Great Britain doesn't agree with that because God made them male and female and non-binary and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know how the Methodist Church of Great Britain plans to deal with those who may actually preach biblical sexual ethics when the church's governing body has already overruled the Bible. We see that in America, too. It's not just limited to the Methodist Church of Great Britain. We see it in U.S. churches, mainline churches. We've seen it for years. In the past, some of the big mainline churches have supported communist revolutionaries. Mm-hmm. And so the people in the pews don't know their money is going to support communist revolutionaries, but they do it anyway. Don't you have a story about that, Allison?
Well, yeah. When I was in high school, we belonged to the United Presbyterian Church. And yes, they were supporting known communists. And I said to my parents, why doesn't our church withdraw from the presbytery? And they said, well, we can't because the presbytery owns the church, and the building.
Yeah.
And if we left, became another denomination, they would take our church away. So that's how. Even though the money was raised by the members of the church.
Yeah, exactly. And pastors, they got to think, well, what's going to, if my congregation votes to leave the denomination, what's going to happen to my pension?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So that's how the big mainline denominations have control over. That's why they don't leave, because they own the property and they have, they have the pastor's pensions. So. Yeah, things are changing. That's why most people today, according to polls, are non-denominational.
So if your church is having a big fundraiser building drive, ask who's going to own the building. Are we the people at the church going to own the building, or is it going to be the head office?
Exactly right. Well, That's something that a lot of people don't know about, I guess, but they should. They should.
Well, here's something that probably not a lot of people know about.
What's that?
Do you know that about one-third of SpongeBob SquarePants fans are adults?
What? Seriously?
That's true.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, did you know, Allison, that, Depend, I used to change your name. God, why did they go to all the trouble? You know how much it costs them to change to drop one letter from the name?
I've seen that before.
These undergarments. We're talking about these Depend undergarments, right?
But I've seen that before with other companies. So, well-known brand name, and they change it.
Yeah, and it costs them, God knows how much money to change all of the stuff that they need to change for that.
Yeah, what was one of you? What was it, Edward Jones?
Was it Edward Jones? I don't remember.
It used to be like Edward E. Jones.
Oh, they just dropped the E. Something like that, yeah. But it's crazy. But the I remember reading that Joe Biden was asked by a reporter whether he wears briefs or boxers, and Joe said, depends. Well, depends, we know what it's for, the undergarments. In 2014, they began targeting the casino crowd. You can kind of figure out why. Ouch. I don't want to go into gory details about that. But they came out with a Depends line called the Player's Advantage. And it's a package prominently showing a royal flush. Yeah. Well, there's a couple of gambling stories I had for you. Do you know what? American households earning less than $13,000 a year spend 9% of their income on lottery tickets?
Wow.
9%. That's why a lot of people call lotteries a tax on the poor.
Mm-hmm. How much do we spend on lottery tickets?
I've never bought a lottery ticket.
Neither have I.
No, never bought a lottery ticket. There's speaking of gambling, there's a Canadian gambler, Brian Zembic. He won a $100,000 bet in 1996, and he's not trans or anything. but won a $100,000 bet in 96 that he'd get breast implants and keep them for a year. And as of right now, he still has them. He still has them. Because he liked them.
Ew.
Oh, man. Well, we are almost out of here, aren't we, Allison?
Almost.
We are Bill and Allison. We're on the air from 8 to 10 every Saturday morning and at firstcoupleoftexasradio.com. So join us there. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Oh, I'm a minute early, aren't I? I don't need to wrap up the show yet. What I do need to do...
I was going to tell you something, but it's sad, so I don't want to end on
something bad?
Sad. Sad. I don't want to end on a sad
note. No, we don't end with sad. Don't forget family game day at the Dietert Center in Kerrville from 2 to 4. Bring your favorite game and learn a new game. It's free. The Dietert Center. Don't forget the Hill Country Gem and Mineral Show at Fredericksburg Rockhounds, Lady Bird Johnson Municipal Park. It's also free today. You can bring stuff and have them identify it. Chili cook-off tomorrow for the Bandera Brewery Scholarship Fund from noon to 4 at the Bandera Brewery. And farmers markets are going on today in Kerrville, River Hills Mall parking lot, and Wells Fargo parking lot, and Comfort City Park, Johnson City Coffee Company, and Lake Hills at 101 Center Street. Now I'm on the right track, time-wise. Thank you, Allison, for running the board.
You're welcome.
We couldn't be here without you. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not into your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths.